Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Odyssey celebrates Father's Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome, and thank you, Mr. Kelly, for passing the baton, and thank you, folks, for stopping by. We'll be taking the Good Gardening Stroll shortly. If you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. On Saturday mornings, we get together and we discuss your yard, your landscape, your garden, your house plants, what to use as far as in pots, how to improve your soil, pruning, bugs, diseases, plants, removals, plant installations, or whatever you want to talk about. Remember my words, open opportunities. After that, it's going to be mental and physical effort on your part during this great marathon called gardening. And this is your show, and I certainly appreciate you being here. Thanks to Greg. He's again producing. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. Oh, my goodness gracious. How's that possible? That isn't possible. Anyway, I've written 5 gardening books. 2 are currently available in various locations. And I write articles for the Missouri Gardener magazine. I got an email yesterday saying, "Where's your article for the next issue?" I sent something to them back in April saying, "When is this next article due?" Heard nothing until yesterday, and they said, "The article's due. We're going to press tomorrow." No, Saturday, no, Sunday, whatever. But anyway, so I'm working on that when I get off today. But anyway, if you'd like for me to come to your home and do a walk and talk, which is more or less a site evaluation, analysis, problem solving, aesthetics, or whatever it happens to be, you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's an email address and a phone number where I can be reached. And on the Good Gardening Stroll, that's my monthly updates. So July, finally, I made it in. I've had some medical problems that just distracted me too much, and I just threw my hands up in despair. But anyway, today's Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. If you have any questions for the folks at St. Louis Composting. I always start off the morning. I never really decide ahead of time where I'm going for the Good Gardening Stroll. And I was sitting around, I was having my cereal and toast and coffee and all that stuff. I thought, I haven't been for, I can't think of where I haven't been recently. Anyway, I thought, Ballpark Village. So I headed down towards downtown. And I got off on Walnut Street, went west on Walnut to Broadway, and then a little bit further than that on 7th. I turned north on 7th and parked. And got out, and I decided to do the Ballpark Village parking lot entrance. Yeah, black metal fencing sets the parameters of the parking area. There's a narrow plantable space in between the curb for the parking and then the sidewalk. But luckily, they have not planted that because it's a very narrow space and the plant material would have a very, very difficult time to survive. So that was very smart of the people there at Ballpark Village. There is on the sidewalk, painted, something that says, if you're not in the know, this is the way, pointing towards the east, to the arch. And plantings at the parking lot entrance, blue spruces provide the backdrop. Floating white balls of forever hydrangeas. Wow, quite a contrast to the blue spruces. There's main grass, which were swaying in the early morning breeze. Dragon wing begonias, red flowers, add the finishing touch. And also there is some rebellious self-seeded celosia remaining from last year, pushing their way through a couple of the begonias. The parking strip in between the entrance and exit includes more hydrangeas, feather reed grass, and a couple other things too. Some crepe myrtle. And at the far, I guess, to the south side, the red, let's see, which type of, red rocket crepe myrtles. Far south side, they're in full bloom. But the ones closer to, let's say, walnut, they're not in bloom at all. They don't even look really all that healthy. So anyway, there's variegated liriope in this strip too. Then there's about an 8-foot wide lawn area, neatly mowed, and it's trying its best to survive in this less than ideal circumstance. There's also some maple trees there as well. They were correctly mulched, not too much, not too little, and they offer some vertical drama. And then finally, at the bottom of the entrance, red letter message says Ballpark Village. There's some dark leaf calocasias, elephant ears in other words, that sort of like, I guess are the parentheses I could say. Then there's red and white cocktail series begonias and a boxwood hedge to finish off this island at the entranceway. Boy, there's a lot of trucks in and out this morning and construction people are out there very early and giant cranes. I don't know what size the buildings are building, but it is going to be quite the massive structures on both ends, east and west of Ballpark Village. So Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. I will be back after these messages.
The only way you can take KMOX with you is with the radio.com app. Download it today and listen to us anytime, anywhere.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, the outdoors, I hope today, they're saying kind of mid to upper 80s, that it stays where it's supposed to be according to the weather people. Like yesterday, I thought it was supposed to be mid to upper 80s. It was like 97. Tracy and I were out, and I mean, it was brutal. It was hard to, a couple places we went, hard to find a place to park the car that was going to be shaded by any kind of trees or buildings or anything. And when I got back into the car, that seat was so hot, I was like toast. You know, my back is sunburnt, only it's burnt from a hot seat. That's unbelievable. So if you do have any questions or concerns or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. You know what I'm going to talk about. Water, 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 water. Also, with your containerized plant material, remember, because you're having to water the amount you do, all the nutrients are being leached out. And consequently, your containerized plants, I used to say maybe every 2 weeks fertilize. Now I'm saying with the amount of extra watering we're having to do, you may consider thinking or doing fertilizing every week to get the most robust growth. Because I was kind of doing that every 2 weeks, and now the last couple weeks I've gone to fertilizing weekly. And gosh, the plants in the containers do a lot better. They look a lot better than what they were doing. So, oh, you just never know. So let's head to St. Charles for the first caller, and that's Rose. And Rose, how are you today?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
Very good.
Okay. I have a weeping cherry tree, and there's stuff oozing out of the trunk, all up and down the trunk. I don't know if it's sap or... It's just a big bunch of stuff oozing out of the trunk of the tree.
Does the tree look healthy?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it bloomed better this year than it ever has.
Wow.
So I'm at a loss.
Yeah, I would say don't worry about it. There are pores in the trunk, just like... So in other words, the trunk is sweating.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, if it's bore problems, what you need to do is look in the lower part of the tree, the bottom 2 feet or so, and see if there's any sap coming out of any location in that area. Kind of gently take the sap away and see if, you know, see what the hole looks like where the sap is coming out of. If it's the size of pencil lead, potentially you could have a bore problem. But if the tree's looking healthy, my guess is it's probably just, you know, the tree's getting rid of some sweat.
Oh, okay. That's the best news I could have hoped for. Thank you.
Sure. And I mean, take a look if you're overly concerned. But, you know, a lot of the peach trees do the same thing. A lot of the fruit trees do ooze sap. Other trees do as well, but just not quite as dramatic as the fruit trees. Let's head now to Centralia, Illinois, and go into Bill's yard. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
I have a beautiful stand of blackberry vines, but I haven't had very many blackberries.
To be honest,
one good picking, and that last year it was like crazy. So
right. It's weather related. It has really messed up a lot of the fruit production, a lot of the vegetable production, a lot of the, you know, just in general, the plant material is just shutting down. I mean, because producing flowers and then consequently producing fruit really stresses a plant out. And even if you've been adequately watering and everything else, it's not going to make that much difference. A plant is going to understand that I can't afford to do this. In other words, flower, fruit. And so it's shutting down the ability or the capabilities that it has to produce the fruits. And that's probably what's happening.
So how can I guarantee that it keeps, you know, maybe next year will be a better year or later on?
Right. There's no, I mean, just keep it healthy. If everything looks good, do what you routinely do. Cut out the older canes, all that type of stuff, fertilizing, everything. Just keep them as healthy as possible and then kind of keep your fingers crossed because you don't know what the weather's going to be. And if it's another year like this year, then we could have the same circumstance over again. Or if it's a year like it was last year where you had great fruit production, then you're going to have great fruit production again.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's a question of we don't understand. We're doing everything correctly. We're watering the right amount. We're fertilizing everything. But sometimes the plant material just can't respond to that. It's just like, you know, you can eat healthy. You can drink all the liquids you want to yourself. But consequently, maybe you don't feel like running today or whatever it happens to be that you usually do. And that's kind of what the plant material is doing, the very same thing. So thanks, Bill. And now let's go to Ledoux and into Pete's yard. Hi, Pete.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
Good. So I started trimming my boxwoods this spring and got a little distracted, and I have several that need some work. Any concerns with my doing some of that trimming now, as long as I maintain watering and all that fun stuff?
Yeah, the watering is fine, but you could really sunburn. It's like if you have, let's say, X amount of hair, you know, an inch or two of hair on your head, and you shave it all the way off, it's going to sunburn. So if you do some pruning when it is this intense, as far as the sunlight goes, you know, almost directly overhead and everything else, everything you're cutting off has been already acclimated to the amount of sun. And maybe it even has a little bit of sunburn tinge to it. But I guarantee you that if you cut stuff off, then now the foliage and the stems, too, fully exposed to the sun could really sunburn and do some damage to it. So I would wait until things kind of modify and probably sometime mid to late August, early September, do the pruning at that time.
Okay. Second question on that same front. Is there, aside from the intense heat part of the summer, is there, quote unquote, another part of the year that would be considered bad in your mind as it relates to boxwoods?
To me, any broadleaf evergreen, I do not like to prune too late in fall or early winter because we don't know how severe the winter is going to be. So we could cut off some stuff that is, you know, like I said, more acclimated to weather circumstances, then everything that remains is, let's say, newly exposed. So consequently, you know, you could get some winter burn as well as summer burn on the, you know, on the remaining foliage on your boxwoods.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Yep. Yeah. So winter, going into wintertime, I don't like to prune broadleaf evergreens at all of any type. So thanks, Pete. And now let's go to Oakville and see what's going on with Bob. Hi, Bob.
Hi. How you doing, Mike?
Very good.
I've got a vegetable garden, and I got bugs eating the vegetables before I get to them. I've got bugs on kale and bugs on green beans. Is there anything you can suggest to keep those suckers away?
Keeping them away? No. There's not too much that can be done. I mean, the insect explosion. Now, if they're there, you can use something like an insecticidal soap to kill them and maybe reduce the population to keep them from breeding and keep the population down in your area. But preventative-wise, there's not too much that can be done for edible plant materials that I've found really all that successful. And the insecticides, like insecticidal soap, are contact killers. And that's basically means you got to squirt it right onto the bugs or else it doesn't do any good.
Oh, so just putting it on the plants wouldn't do any bug?
No, as a preventative type thing, you could do that, yes, but you're probably wasting a lot of the chemicals from the insecticidal soap or whatever you choose to use, whether it's 7 or some of these other things that are safe for edibles. But you're kind of wasting stuff unless, it's just...
I usually use 7 on my beans right when they start growing, and that seems to kill them.
Right. So, I mean, but now we're deeper into the season, so it's a little bit later. So, I mean, you could try the 7 and see what happens, but there's a lady that lives down the street from me. She puts 7 on her vegetables, too. And, you know, she does a great job, production-wise and everything else. But whatever she's put the 7 on recently has just collapsed, not because of the 7, but just because of the weather being so intense. So just, be conscious of all that. If you keep your plants healthy as much as you possibly can, that's all you can expect out of this time of year with this weather.
One other problem I have is a deer that jumps 2 fences to get to my beans. Can I do anything to keep that thing back in the woods?
Well, you could hire somebody to come out and kill it. But
that's an idea.
But, in reality, I mean, the repellents, if the deer is going to that, that circumstance, hopping over 2 fences to get to it, it's desperate. So in other words, they're not necessarily going for the nutrient value of your beans. It's the moisture content. As you know, beans are really quite moist, whether we're talking about the exterior pod or actually the beans inside the pods. So they get into very much habits. If you go into the woods, you can tell exactly where the deer are walking all the time and everything else. And once they get into a habit like this, then you're kind of stuck. I've recommended in the past getting motion detectors and getting an irrigation system, or a sprinkler put on, so the deer would trigger the irrigation system with the motion, and consequently then it would spray the deer, and then the deer would go yikes and maybe stop its habit and send it over to somebody else's yard. But that's pretty much about all you can do.
Okay, I've heard about things that you can put out to. Keep the deer away.
If they went to the trouble to jump a couple fences, yes, those repellents will work. And there's nothing wrong with giving them a try, but don't expect great things from them. But it may certainly, stop them, break this habit, and then your beans and your vegetable garden is going to be much more enjoyable for you. So thanks, and why don't we go ahead and take a break? Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
KMOX and Llewellyn's Pub present the 2018 I-70 Getaway. Join the KMOX Street Team Tuesday at Llewellyn's in St. Charles from 5 till 7 p.m. You can register for a chance to win a trip to Kansas City for the I-70 Series in August, complete with transportation, hotel, and tickets to the game. The I-70 Series Getaway, presented by New Vodka and Llewellyn's Pubs, Celtic for good times. Go to KMOX.com/I-70 for details and registration locations. This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, this heat has been intense. I've been growing sweet potato vines for multiple years. I usually grow various colors. This year, I've had two or three different varieties collapse. I mean, they just burnt up. They just couldn't handle it. And one of them is chartreuse, but it's not, a full-leafed one. It's more like, looks like fingertips, kind of. Well, I shouldn't say that. It looks like the full-leaf ones look like spades. The other ones look like the edge is more cut. And those are chartreuse as well. Historically, I just like them because they have different texture, even though the color's the same. But boy, those chartreuse ones are burning, maybe gone by the time I get back home today. And I've had some variegated ones with some rune stripes in them. And these are, facing west, so they get intense sun in the afternoon. That one's already completely imploded. Now, I have some sweet potato vines that are variegated or maroon color leafed on the north side of the house. They look spectacular. So it just goes to show you the difference, and probably the distance between those are maybe 30 or 40 feet. So consequently, full sun afternoon has just burnt up some of them, and the other ones, look fantastic, I'd have to say. So let's see. If you got any questions, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Headed out to Fenton and into Dave's yard. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thank you. I apologize if this question has been addressed already. I missed the beginning of the show, but could you tell me the best time of year and procedure or method to trim a river birch, crepe myrtles, and knockout roses?
Okay, with the river birch can be birch, beech, and maple trees can be pruned in the summertime. So there's no problem doing that. If you want to get out there and really work up a sweat, you can prune them now. You don't have to. But you're probably, pruning deciduous things. You could do that, later on in the season. Just make sure you get it done before the new growth begins next spring. Crepe myrtle, you prune those after they finish flowering in the, mid to late fall or early, weather dependent is going to determine when they finish flowering. And the knockout roses, that's going in the wintertime. Some people like to prune them back heavily, and some people, don't prune at all until we come out of wintertime. I prune mine. I have four knockout roses. I have them in containers, so I prune them back heavily and then put them in the garage for the wintertime. But if they're outside in the ground, you can prune them. You should prune them after each flush of roses and then go ahead and prune them going into wintertime. Probably about whatever size they are, cut about half of the stems off lengthwise.
And on the birch, do you need to put any kind of medication on it at all when you trim it?
No. None of that medication works anymore. Days of old, it had lead in it. It was very much, would prevent some of the bacteria and, virus problems or something along that line. But now they're strictly cosmetic. So those things do not help whatsoever.
So you don't have to worry about any sap or anything.
No,
sap
is going to be a natural thing, but there's less sap flow this time of year on beech, birch, and maples, and then there is in the wintertime. That's why you can prune them in the summertime versus winter.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. And now let's go to Harold in Chesterfield. Hi, Harold.
Yeah, Mike. I have, it must be a Bermuda grass that's appeared in my yard. Is there any way to get rid of it?
I get a lot of questions about the Bermuda grass. Birds love it for nesting and things like that. They can pull some out of some yard and fly over your yard, drop it, and it can, get itself rooted and then become explosively invasive. But other than just going out and trying to get it, use an herbicide because you have a full patch area and killing it off that way, there's not too much else that can actually be done.
Okay. Does it come back the next season?
You better believe it does. That's why golf courses use it.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for your help.
Yeah, it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Sometimes it's, I don't say to embrace a Bermuda, but it's really a difficult battle. Now, there are a couple herbicides that will go after and will kill the Bermuda, but it may have an impact on your lawn. And a lot of these, you have to be a licensed herbicide or a, you know, pesticide applicator to actually have access to be able to purchase them. So if you have some kind of lawn service come in, tell them about the Bermuda and then say, what can you do for me to try to get this under control?
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. And now let's jump the river over to Belleville. Marilyn, how are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you. And I'm calling about, I have a big tree in my backyard. It's a maple tree. And many mornings when I get up and look out my patio door, the ground is covered with little branches that maybe a foot long, foot and a half, that have leaves on them that are lying in the grass. And to the point where I have to go out and pick these up because there's that many. They're just all over.
Wow.
Now, I think that this is squirrels doing this.
Well, it could, you know, it could be if, you know, if the branches are cut like at a 45 degree angle, then it definitely is a squirrels.
Okay, so what else could it maybe be?
Well, I mean, it could be just, even though they have leaves and everything else, the tree could be, it's sort of like, you know, what I was talking about earlier. The trees could be going, yikes, I can't help, yeah, I can't support all these, you know, all these leaves. So they start compartmentalizing or shutting off things. And then the wind, I'm assuming you're having the same winds we are, is just, you know, it doesn't seem logical that they compartmentalize it because it's not dead wood, but that's about the only other thing it could possibly be.
And it's not just when there's wind or a storm. I mean, it can be totally quiet, you know, and like maybe a week or so ago, it was every day.
It's like got, you know, again, it's still got to be weather related. That's the only explanation I can come up with, because if you're getting the amount that you're describing, unless you have 100 squirrels living in that tree, which I doubt if you do, you may have two or three at the most.
No, I've got many squirrels in my yard. I do. They're destructive little dudes.
Right, exactly. But yeah. Still, they're not. I mean, what they're doing is they're chewing it. You know, chewing the branch, and they're, you know, drinking the sap. They're desperate because there's no moisture anywhere.
Okay.
And so that's about all I can think of weather-wise, and then, you know, squirrel-wise.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And
one thing I want to ask you, too, does the foliage look good? Is it color-wise, everything look good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
And I've noticed looking up in this big tree that, you know, it seems like I'm still thinking it's the squirrels. They chew on it, and it falls, but it doesn't fall all the way down to the ground. So it's on a branch, and then those leaves dry out because it's just there.
Right.
And then eventually it falls down.
Right.
But most of them are green, yeah, healthy looking.
So, yeah, so they're going after the moisture.
Okay, gotcha.
those Belleville squirrels, I can't believe them.
So. Thank you very much, Mike.
Certainly. And now let's go to Bob, or let's go to George in South County. Hi, George.
Hi there. Well, I have another theory about this nice lady's leaves or branches on the ground.
Okay.
Or twigs, actually. I had the same thing with the sugar maple, and it's happened every year except this year so far. And it turns out it was twig girdlers. Those nasty little bugs come in, and they just saw right the little ends of the branches right off and leave a mess all over the ground every day.
You know, that could certainly be the case, and then cicadas do the same thing. Because the female cicada will rip on the other underside of the branch, and that causes that branch to drop off too.
Yeah. These things were, you know, it looked like something had just nibbled them around a circle and left just a little bitty spot in the middle, and that was not enough to hold it up there, and it would fall to the ground.
Well, that's a good idea, because I didn't even think of the twig girdlers.
Yeah. I didn't either until I was just sitting out there one day wondering, you know, how many squirrels could there be on this little tree? It's a fairly young tree, and then I saw these things flying in and buzzing away, and then all of a sudden the leaves are on the ground. So.
Okay.
It's another theory anyway.
Well, great. Well, thanks, George.
You betcha.
Greatly appreciated. And that insight, sometimes when I'm thinking about things, I sort of like twig girdlers are something that's, you know, really problematic. And obviously that may be something. So, you know, you should have a tree service come out and take a look for twig, you know, girdlers, and they just, like he said, they eat the sort of the bark all the way around, and that causes a, you know, that piece of branch, twig, or whatever to fall to the ground. So let's go to Shiloh, Illinois, into Bob's yard. Hi, Bob.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I'm going to put in a vote for the squirrels. I got the same maple tree. I got the same family of squirrels, and every morning I have the same problem. And the squirrels tend to like that tree. They're not my other trees, and the only tree that has that problem is that one. And so I like squirrels, so I don't really care. I pick up my twigs every morning, but it's the squirrels.
Right.
So anyways, I'm sure you're getting tired of talking about squirrels, but it's the squirrels.
I love squirrels.
All right. Have a good day.
Well, thank you, Bob. Yeah, we live across the street from Christie Park, and so I get to see the squirrels bouncing across the park all the time. But I have not noticed in the park a bunch of twigs on the ground. So yeah, I guess those are really domesticated squirrels in that park. They don't want to ruin this. No, who knows? But anyway, let's go now to Breeze, Illinois, into Ron's yard. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Mike. Say, I wonder if it's too late to trim my azalea bushes.
Definitely. You may be okay, but I thought, you know, you got about 60 days or so after they finish flowering. But even though you can look at the end of the branches and say, well, I don't really see any bud formation yet, the chemistry with inside the plant may be already formulating the bud, even though it's not physically, you know, noticeable. Let's put it that way. So I would say don't do it.
So next spring then?
Yeah, next spring, right after they finish flowering. You got about any place between 30 to 60 days to do it at that time.
Yeah, I knew I should have done it earlier. I just didn't get to it. Okay, thank you.
Yep, and if your azaleas, you know, are healthy and everything else, don't prune them. There's no reason to. That doesn't help them at all. So Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, if I wasn't so egomaniacic and my head wasn't so big, I would read that, you know, let's say monthly updates that Mike Miller, I don't know who Mike Miller is, but he does them every month on his website. It's on the Good Gardening Stroll page of his website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. And here we go. Under the section of brutal bugs, so in other words, damage is more pronounced during hotter, drier spells, blah, blah, blah. But further down in this whole thing, Mike Miller wrote, but anyway, as we were talking about some of the problems with, you know, branches dropping, fallen green branch tips. I have it. It's right here. In parentheses, twig girdling beetle. Gee, whoever wrote that, you know, monthly update for July, I guess I should start reading my own stuff. I'm so dumb. If you do have any questions or concerns, give us a call at 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Besides that, as I mentioned before, you're going to start to see, you know, if twigs are going to fall off the trees and there's going to be slits on the underside. That's the cicadas, the female cicada, and she lays those eggs in that slit. And you're going to find other things going as well in your shade garden. Most of the insect problems are really related to sun-oriented type plant materials, not all of them. But in the shaded areas, slugs, boy, oh boy, they can be brutal. They suck holes in the foliage, let's say of something like a hosta, and also they put slime on everything. For insects, a lot of times you got to go out either in the earlier morning or later in the day as the sun, not necessarily at sundown, but later in the day to find the insects, what the problem is. And to me, this year, what's been more problematic as far as eating foliage on cannas, you know, I grow several different cannas in various locations, has been grasshoppers. You know, it's just brutal. And I just go after them. I try to catch them, and then I squeeze them and squash them and, you know, do that too. And then I look at my hand and go, ooh. But anyway, I prefer that over just spraying. Brian lives in North County. Hi, Brian.
Hi. I got some pin oaks, and I've noticed around the neighborhood that several are dying off, or at least very few green leaves on them right now. we've had problems with galls up here.
Right.
Is galls and the weather stressing them out? I've never seen them this far gone this point in the summers before. And these are 40-year-old trees.
Right.
Bush honeysuckle and different shrubs at the base of these trees add to their abuse?
Well, it can, because there's competition for moisture, there's competition for nutrients and everything else. So that could impact it. But, the galls, you're only going to have, let's say, really impactful situations happen related to galls. If you have a huge amount of galls on your trees, that's, going to be real obvious when you look up there. But to me, I still think it's all weather related. Because, the trees, they had to push out their growth without having a real spring. And then the growth, came out. But then consequently, it was already starting to face some really high temperatures. And the trees just were not ready for that. What I would do in the future, too, is if these are in your landscape, your trees that we are talking about, or, do something called deep root feeding in the wintertime. So sometime after Halloween and before Valentine's Day or before the 1st of March or before the new growth starts, get an electric drill, earth auger, holes around, concentric holes all the way around, and then backfill those holes with compost. Then consequently, you're feeding your soil. Then in turn, your soil will feed your trees and maybe make a better environment for your trees to withstand this crazy weather stuff. It's not to say it's not going to happen again, but at least you're going to have a healthier soil and the tree may have a better impact as a result of this work.
Well, one other question. If bush honeysuckle, cut that out and treat it to kill it, if it's at the base of the tree, is that going to affect the tree?
It shouldn't. Basically, make your cut, then you can put Roundup right on, Roundup for killing woody plants right on the open cut, or a stump killer or something like that. It should not impact the tree roots at all. Basically, the feeder roots are out, as far out as the branches are. So up close to the tree, you're just, the trees, the honeysuckle, if it's up close to the trunk, it could have some impact, but it's not really competing, tremendously. It's just making, let's say, a less than ideal environment for the tree.
Yeah, and at what point can we say the tree is past saving?
Well, if you look up into a tree and historically it's had a zillion leaves and only has a half a zillion leaves, and the next year it has a quarter zillion leaves, then that's when it's, there's not too much you can do at this point other than, like I say, feeding the soil, trying to do it that way. Additional watering, all that other stuff is not going to make all that much difference, especially on a 40-year-old tree.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Sorry.
No problem.
Yeah. Yeah, this weather has just been, it's really been brutal on so many different things. And even if things were not marginally healthy, those were certainly going to be impacted. But even a lot of healthy things are showing some detrimental impacts. So thanks, Brian. And now let's go to, we probably don't have time. So Pat from Kirkwood, we're going to have to talk to you next hour. So Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. We do have another hour, and so just hang in there, and we will talk to you after the news.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.